Beginning with Iraq, over the weekend, there were reports of the White House considering some response to ISIS inside war-torn Syria for the first time. A U.S. journalist hostage, Theo Curtis, was released by an insurgent group in Syria, al-Nusra, after being held for 2 years. There was no ransom paid, said the family, but al-Nusra is a pale cousin of the group, the Islamic State, ISIS, or ISIL, as the White House calls them. We had a deep and candid conversation about ISIS and Iraq's chances against them right now with Ali Kaderi. He's chairman and chief executive of Dragoman Partners. He's served as special assistant to 5 American ambassadors in Iraq and as senior advisor to 3 heads of the Central Command from 2003 to 2010. He says the U.S. needs to take ISIS far more seriously than it ever has taken more familiar al-Qaeda. And he says Iraq may already be out of its league on the battlefield, trying to regain any of the territory it has already lost to ISIS.
Iraq does have a chance, but frankly, it's an increasingly waning chance. And the reason is because the Iraqi government since 2003, particularly over the past 4 years under Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, has chosen to be increasingly divisive and increasingly sectarian and increasingly allied with an alliance that includes Iran, Assad's regime in Syria, and with Hezbollah. And by through the misrule of both Assad in Syria and Maliki in Baghdad, what's happened is a regional sectarian fault line has emerged, and that has disenfranchised the Sunnis in both countries. And that really has opened up a window, as we saw in post-2003 Iraq, for both al-Qaeda and now its supercharged version, which is the Islamic State.
Before we talk about ISIS, do you envision the possibility of Baghdad being the capital of some kind of rump state that's essentially a sort of a province of Iran?
That certainly, frankly, is the odds-on favorite. I think that Prime Minister-designate Abadi and the government in Baghdad has a chance to form an inclusive government and has a chance of doing business in a new way, again, that unites all of Iraqis and makes all Iraqis feel like they have a stake in the future of the country as opposed to its failure. But that chance and those odds, frankly, are just not very high, probably 1 out of 5 in my estimation. And so what is increasingly looking to be more and more likely is that indeed Baghdad, or perhaps even Najaf or Karbala or Basra, one of the other major cities in southern Shia Iraq, will be the capital of a new rump Shia state that's increasingly aligned with Iran and is firmly in Iran's sphere of influence. And then you're looking at the partition of the country into maybe 3 or 4 different parts, Kurdistan in the north, at least one Sunni state in the center. And then again, given the situation in Syria, a very similar situation is almost certain to occur there.
Does the U.S. bear responsibility for this, or was it inevitable? Did the U.S. get out too soon? What do you think about that?
It's a great question. And the answer, as with everything in Iraq and in the Middle East, is complicated. The U.S. certainly bears responsibility, but also, frankly, I think it's very important to highlight both the Iraqi role. I mean, it is their country after all, and they are the primary actors on the ground every day, but also the regional role, and primarily Iran's malign influence in Iraq, going back decades really, but especially since 2003, since they have armed, trained, equipped, and otherwise organized the creation of Iraq's Shia Islamist militias, and even they've cooperated with al-Qaeda occasionally. And they really sought to do that to destabilize Iraq, to keep it weak and divided so that the mullahs in Tehran could continue to wield a tremendous amount of influence over the Iraqis, really as sort of a big brother. That is something that's not often enough touched upon, but really is a major force of the continuing instability that we see across really the entire Middle East, from Lebanon and their role with Hezbollah to, again, the genocide that's occurring in Syria at the hands of Assad, Hezbollah, the Iraqi militias, and the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. And we're even beginning to see signs of that in Afghanistan, where the Iranians are playing a major destabilizing role.
Do you think the U.S. airstrike policy, which seems to have stabilized the situation between ISIS and the Kurds, is something that has to be in place more or less indefinitely? Or is it the U.S. responsibility, and do they even have the capability of rolling back ISIS in some way by actually entering the conflict?
Again, the answer is complicated. The American airstrikes in Iraq are frankly nothing more than a pinprick. They are a couple of Tylenol tablets to address a headache that has been caused by a cancer, which is again the misrule from Maliki's government in Baghdad and Assad's misrule in Damascus. The root cause of this cancer, ISIS, is the sectarian policies and again the genocide that we've seen in Syria and Maliki's misrule and alienation of the Sunnis in Iraq. And so really what we're talking about with these airstrikes are tactics, not strategy. It's why, frankly, recently in an open letter to President Obama, I have begged him to adopt a coherent Middle East strategy to appoint, for example, an American five-star general as a modern-day General Eisenhower, as a czar for the Middle East, because what we really need is we need a coherent strategy. We need to work very closely with our regional allies because that is really the only viable solution for beginning to address the underlying factors that have given rise to ISIS. And frankly, it's very important to explicitly say that only Sunni Arabs from across the Middle East, and principally from Syria and Iraq itself, or themselves, only they can roll back ISIS in their countries. No foreign military force, especially modern-day crusaders in the form of Western militaries like the American Army, they will never be able to roll back ISIS or Al-Qaeda anywhere in the world because they're seen as modern-day crusaders in a very bad light. They're viewed as Christian armies coming in to the heart of the Islamic world. And frankly, if that were to happen again, if you were to see boots on the ground again anywhere in the Middle East, all that would do is it would help embolden and strengthen and finance Al-Qaeda or ISIS's efforts.
So if the U.S. Doesn't move into Iraq again, how does ISIS grow? It can't be by the occasional beheading of Western journalists or, you know, slaughtering villagers, ethnic cleansing. What do? Go after Israel or send suicide bombers to Paris and L.A.?
The short answer is a combination of all of the above. Again, what we've seen with ISIS is that it is truly a supercharged version of Al-Qaeda. It is the Al-Qaeda that bin Laden could have only dreamed of in 2001 before orchestrating the attacks of 9/11, in that it is winning on every front so far. It is, as a result of those victories, able to recruit tens of thousands of new fighters, not from only across the Islamic world, but also from Western countries like in Europe and the United States. And as a result of these victories, it is now a self-financing organization because it has captured several oil fields in Syria and in Iraq. They're not major ones, but according to some estimates I've seen, ISIS is now selling up to 100,000 barrels of oil a day to actually Assad himself and to the locals in these provinces. So we're talking about $10 million a day of revenue generation potentially for ISIS. And obviously you can do a lot with that, given that bin Laden staged 9/11 with only $500,000 and a couple dozen operatives. So ISIS now again has a war chest of hundreds of millions of dollars potentially. They have hundreds of millions of dollars worth of U.S. military equipment that they seize when the Iraqi army, you know, dissipated. And they have thousands of very eager young fighters from around the world, hundreds, perhaps thousands of which or whom have Western passports. And so these sleeper cells in major Western European cities like Paris or London or Rome or potentially in the United States, it's not an issue of if they come. It's simply an issue of when they will strike in the West.
Well, that's comforting. What's the U.S. response?
The only viable U.S. response has to be, number one, President Obama and other senior administration officials need to be very honest with the American people that we are at war. I know that Americans are war-weary, they're tired, and frankly, I don't blame them. Myself, having served over 2,000 days in Iraq, I'm quite tired of war myself, but the reality is you don't get to choose if and when your enemy comes after you. If they tell you, for example, that you know, we will fly the ISIS flag over the White House, or quote, you will drown in pools of your own blood, and they have promised both things. They have said, we will see you in New York. And I think, frankly, we should take them at their word, given bin Laden's promises to attack the homeland years before 9/11 occurred. So the only viable American response has to be, again, being honest with the American people, being honest with ourselves. The president should stop calling ISIS the junior varsity team. His deputy national security advisor only last week said on CNN that ISIS is not a threat to the homeland and is not a threat to American interests. That's patently false. We should be honest, number one. Number two, we need a coherent regional strategy. Number three, we really do need a Middle East czar to work on a daily basis with our regional allies to share intelligence, to share military assets, to work together to reach a diplomatic conclusion to some of these threats. And we just, as Americans, have to unite and understand that this is going to be a long, costly campaign, but it's one that we have no choice in addressing. We can either pull back everyone and just wait for another 9/11, or we can take the fight directly to the enemy.
Ali Kaderi, Chairman and Chief Executive of Dragoman Partners. He served as special assistant to five American ambassadors in Iraq and as senior advisor to three heads of the Central Command from 2003 to 2010. Thanks so much.
Thank you.